Hi, good morning, John. Thanks for having me.
I knew this was bound to eventually come true because vaping has been sort of an experiment for a good long time health-wise, and now apparently it contributes to the possibility of heart failure.
Yeah, so this is a big study looking at a large population. Again, these studies are hard to draw definite conclusions from. We do know vaping, for example, can increase the risk of lung issues. We saw a major issue a few years ago with individuals being hospitalized for this. But one of the questions is, does vaping affect the heart? And in this large study, they looked at people with a condition called heart failure when the heart muscle itself is not working particularly well. And they looked at individuals who vaped and individuals who didn't vape. And they saw the odds of having heart failure were higher in the individuals that vaped versus didn't vape. Now, again, there's lots of different things that can happen here. They did try to adjust to try to account for that. Could still be people who vape may have other habits that lead them to heart failure. But at the same time, I think we're learning that this is not as benign as everyone imagined, that even the nicotine content can have some issues and the inhaled particles. And it is an area that needs to be watched. It took decades before we understood the risk between a lung cancer and cigarette smoking. And so, this is relatively new, and it may take decades to really understand the health impact of vaping on people long term.
Okay, and that brings me to blinking. And apparently it boosts your vision. How so?
So, the traditional thought is, you get your eyes more lubricated with every blink, and that helps. But you can imagine every time you blink, all that sensory input to your eye shuts down for a second, and you would think, oh, that's a bad thing. Now, our brains are wired so that we don't really experience the blink. It's just a constant field of vision. But in fact, that resetting, that dimming, is actually protective, and it actually may increase the resolution in that sense. So that those little flickers or those little pauses may cause a bit of dimming, may stimulate the retina, may actually get the vision a little bit better as you open up your eyes again. And so it's almost like, those film reels that have little pauses inserted, those for our brain are actually particularly healthy. So another reason why your eye health is important. And again, the more we learn about this process, the better.
So it seems every week we've got an AI story to talk about, and this time it's hey, they're going to replace you.
Yeah, so this is obviously personal to me in the context that AI replacing physicians is on the agenda. And so this is a really cool study. And in my field, one of the things I see every day is people that have blood infections. Those are probably the most serious things I see on a day-to-day basis. And it's really important that we start the right antibiotics, we do the right testing, we consider the right investigations, even things like surgery in those patients. So they looked at a set of patients. They uploaded their data to ChatGPT and they saw what came out of it. Some of the time, it was actually completely appropriate, the right antibiotics, the right investigations, the right surgeries. But there was a significant number of times where it was completely inappropriate. And so, I think these studies are going to come out more and more. There are a lot of things that AI can do that are going to improve medicine significantly. But clinical decision making, that physician and that patient relationship is really, really hard to replicate. I think there are great examples where AI could help in terms of things like charting and menial tasks where doctors could really benefit from that extra assistant. But I think clinical decision making is still a long time away, recognizing the challenges.
This next story is fascinating because I think a lot of people always thought it was an urban myth, but apparently there's a link between cats and schizophrenia. Now, is that causal or a covariable? What's the link?
Yeah, so this has been a long discussion that's been gone back for decades. And the thought of the link was this parasite called Toxoplasma. This is the same parasite that we counsel pregnant women to not change kitty litter for because it can infect their unborn children. But in individuals, and we see this in the animal kingdom, it can lead those animals to have higher risk behavior, more aggressive behavior. It actually is evolutionary because those little mice that get infected then are aggressive and go after the cats and unfortunately get eaten and the life cycle continues. So there's always been a thought in humans this happens. And so, you know, this study looked at a lot of different studies and the exposure of cats in schizophrenia. It doesn't necessarily say this link is there, but certainly in controlling for it, they did see that there was a higher risk of schizophrenia in people that own cats. Again, lots of different covariates, lots of different things in process. But this toxoplasma link has been there for some time and certainly has been seen in the animal kingdom. And so again, it is one thing to consider. And again, one thing that we, you know, may need to start screening for in the long-term future.
And this final story, it's going to be a cause for celebration with the federal Liberals creating a dental care program. And it's the link between oral health and general wellness, which is something that heart doctors have been talking about for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we recognize that oral health is important, right? And it's not just appearance. There's pain. There's the ability to eat. There's the ability to phonate and to have discussions. There's the ability to live without pain. And, you know, in serious cases, including what I see on a day-to-day basis, when people have significant dental problems, they can get heart infections. When people have significant dental problems, they can get pneumonia from them. And so, you know, I think, you know, it's funny, I heard a quote the other day when we decided to build insurance plans, we just left the eyes and the teeth out and did everything else. But in reality, you know, again, it is an important organ. It has to be dealt with. And, you know, isolated policies, not dealing with dental care, but dealing with the medical complications of dental care are you know, archaic. And we really do need to integrate it as part of a preventative care approach.
Well, I've certainly heard a lot of stories from emergency room physicians about the number of people who show up because they don't have access to dental care and they show up in emergency because they're in incredible pain.
Yeah, absolutely. And at that point, you're giving people antibiotics, you're giving them powerful narcotics. This is not what we want to do. There's a lot of primary care and prevention that's cheaper and easier. But again, you know, we've created these systems where dental care is a separate entity from the rest of medical care, which doesn't make a lot of sense.
Thanks a lot for this. Great to see you.
No problem. All the best.